Good morning and welcome everyone. Thank you for braving the brutal winter weather and coming to Midrashat Yom Rishon. I initially thought that I would call this class just chill, but I realized that's not actually the correct message. The message of it's okay to be human. I remember many years ago, I was a student in yeshiva in Israel. I was already teaching at Or Hasameach. This was probably in the, 1980s. And there was a flash flood in the Negev, and with tragic consequences. And there's someone I know who was involved in the recovery operation of the bodies. And he came back, and he said that that how impressed he was by the families who lost people, like a couple of the people he met. He says, you looked at them, that you looked at their face, you could not tell there was a tragedy, they were strong. It was, you know, and he was very impressed, and I remember being a little troubled by it, and I couldn't quite put my finger on why. And I realized only recently that the reason I was troubled by this is because he was impressed by the fact that these people were not human. In a sense, they had maybe had educated out of themselves human emotion. In other words, they were told that maybe it's inappropriate to scream, to cry, to show normal human emotion, because what do you mean? Hashem decreed that it's so, divine justice, and so on and so forth. And he was impressed by that, and I think that's not appropriate. I don't think the attitude that a person, we could believe in Hashem, and we trust that ultimately everything is for a final good, but that does not mean that we cannot respond with normal human emotion to normal human interactions. Nachmanides, the Ramban, says in his commentary, when the Torah tells us it is prohibited, lasois chabura al hameis, it was a pagan custom that they would mutilate themselves, cut themselves as a sign of mourning for the dead, or they'd pluck out hair as a sign of mourning. So the Torah says it's prohibited to do that. It's inappropriate to do that. So the Ramban says, well, it's inappropriate to do that because that's a permanent sign of mourning, and that would be an indication that almost like a denial of the eternity of the soul. It's almost a denial of the idea of Olam Haba, the world to come. He says, but it is indeed inappropriate to mutilate oneself, to cut oneself, to pull out hair as a permanent sign of mourning. But he says it's totally appropriate and a mitzvah to cry and to mourn in a normal fashion. He says, because we are human beings. Even though the Gemara quite famously says, it says, Keshem Shemavarchim Al hatova kach mevarchim al hara'a. As we make a brocha on good news, we also make a brocha, a blessing, on bad news. But the Gemara points out it's a different blessing. It's not the same blessing. If we were robots, religious robots, orthobots, right? If we were religious robots who feel that it's inappropriate to have any emotion, then the bracha should be the same. But just take it. It's exactly the same. No difference. Right? News of war, news of peace, it's all the same, it's hands of Hashem. But that's not how it works. We are supposed to be honest in our emotions, and we're allowed to be. You know, it's interesting, if you look in the Siddur, we say, Baruch atah Hashem l'kenem melecha, yotzer or uvore choshech, oseh shalom uvore sakol. Yotzer or, God, we praise God who forms light, yotzer or, uvore choshech, creates darkness, oseh shalom, makes peace, uvore es hakol, and creates everything. In the original pasuk in Yeshaya, it actually does not. It says, "Oseh shalom uvore ra." He creates peace. He makes peace and creates evil. But in our prayers, we don't say. It's modified. "Oseh shalom uvore es hakol." Why? Because prayer is supposed to be honest. It's very hard, honestly, to say there, stand there in the morning and say, "Thank God for evil." It's just awesome. I guess. Wonderful. Where would we be without ISIS? Right? So although on a philosophically and ultimately that is true, but when it comes to expressing ourselves and our hearts to Hashem in prayer is supposed to be, there's a certain honesty which would be lacking if we would say that. For the same reason, or similar reason, we know that we, on every Yom Tov, every festival, with two exceptions, we say Hallel. Whenever we bring certain festive offerings in the temple, Musaf, and so on and so forth, we say Hallel, special beautiful songs of praise in the morning service, in Shacharis. And the exception is Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. And why don't we say it on Rosh Hashanah? So the Gemara says, because Sifrei Chaim, Sifrei Meisim, Psuchim Lefonov, the Yisrael Amrim Shira, the books of life and death are open before God, and you're singing Shira, you're singing Hallel. So what's the meaning of that? What's the Gemara trying to say there? I think what it's trying to say is that it wouldn't be honest to sing Hallel when you know you are being judged for your very existence. If the halacha could say, "Lo, you have to say it," then we would say it. But it's not the type of thing where, you know, you could really sing in that way. I remember there was a tune I heard for Unasane Toikef, beautiful tune, and I davened at one of the minyanim at Gateways, Rosh Hashanah. So I'm the chazan at least for part of it. So not really a chazan, but I lead the prayers. So I sang the tune for my wife. She said, no. She said, that's not Unasana Tokev tune, right? You cannot, that tune doesn't go, the tune doesn't fit the words. You know, sometimes the words, stick with the traditional tune, it fits the words. The emotion sometimes of the tune is not always appropriate for the words. You know, I often find this, you know, it's sometimes very Litvisha minyonim, right? Lachadoidi. It really sounds like kinois sometimes. I mean, it's like, it's really like, you know, you feel like it's like the Ger Rebbe said, you know, when they asked him why there are two verses in Megillas Esther, which we read in the tune of Eicha, Lamentations. So he said, so the Litvak should also enjoy Purim. So, you know. So, anyway. So therefore, rather than calling the class chill, I felt that it would be better to call it It's Okay to Be Human. And just by the way, in terms of reacting to tragedy, there's two letters, and not everything is in the outline here, and you can, you know, the outline is just because I guess they asked for an outline. But anyway, the Rambam was very close with his younger brother David. And David, he actually invested money with David. David did business and was a merchant, and he actually supported the Rambam for a long time. The Rambam was able to study and to write, and that's one of the reasons that the number 14 crops up in a lot of his books. There are 14 volumes of the Mishneh Torah. There are 14 roots of his Book of Commandments. There's another book he's got, 14 chapters, Milat Hikayon. Right? It's like it's a tribute, because David, numerical value of David is 14. So it's a way of like hinting at his brother, his presence there. So, but when his brother went on a business trip from the port of Aydab in what's today called Sudan, and the ship went down in the Indian Ocean, and brother died, and the Rambam writes after that, he said it was very difficult for him to even get out of bed for close to a year afterwards. He was so depressed. And afterwards, any time he'd ever see something in his brother's handwriting, he'd burst into tears. We actually have in the Cairo Geniza the last letter that David wrote to his brother Rambam. He actually wrote it from the port of Aydab. And he writes about how terrible he had this time in the desert, and he prayed that God who saved him from the desert, will save him at sea. Unfortunately, that prayer was not answered. So he was a human being. He was a human being. So the first source I have, which actually I will look at the sources occasionally, right, is two sources, Gemara and Brachos and Kiddushin. And the phrase is a very important phrase which is used here. Two different contexts. The first context is regarding the obligation. A person cannot say a blessing when they're naked. you have to cover your nakedness, and is there a division? Well, if there's no division between between your face, your eyes, and the nakedness, it's problematic. The Gemara talks about someone who's a man is immersed in the mikvah up to his neck. Is that okay? And the Gemara says yes, it's okay. And the Gemara says, well, what are you talking about? But his nakedness is visible to the rest of his body. And the Talmud says, well, what do you want? Lo nitna Torah, lo malachei asharis. The Torah was not given to angels. Angels don't have an issue of nakedness. Angels don't have a body. Angels don't have... The Torah was given to human beings. If you say that this is an issue, that means you're saying that a human being can't keep mitzvahs in a normal way. The other example, the Gemara in Kiddushin, talks about the clothing of Kohanim. So it can only be worn in when the Kohen is actually serving in the temple, in the Beis HaMikdash. So so wearing it in a chol situation, a profane, non-holy situation, problematic. So what's the Kohen supposed to do? So does he transgress? Right, he's finished doing the korban. He's finished the avodah. He's finished the service in the temple. So as soon as he finishes, what is he supposed to do? Right, so quick change right there in the Beis HaMikdash, in the temple. Right, can he walk to the changing room? Can he walk to his home? What can he do? So the answer is, of course he can. Why? Lo nitna Torah, lo malachei hasharis. The Torah was not given to angels. It's not possible for a person to switch clothing instantaneously without any type of gap. You can't expect that. I do remember, though, that basic training. So we were at one base, and they told us ahead of time that you must bring... You're going to get your uniform at Bakum, which is the central base, Basis Klita Umiyun, the absorption and designation base where you start off army service. You'll get a uniform there, but you will have to return the uniform at the end of basic training. So bring a change of clothes. Okay. So there was one guy who ignored this. Now this is the army. Right? It was winter in Israel. We're in a place called Dotan, and he was not allowed to leave the base with the uniform. He went out in his long johns, right, on a bus in winter in Israel, right? So this is the last time he ignored an instruction from the army, right? So, however, God is more merciful than the army, right? And he says, "Lo nitna Torah, lo malachei hasharis." Another famous example of this, I've got the Aruch HaShulchan here, who talks about, you know, tefillin are supposed to be square. Supposed to be square. How square do they have to be? It sounds like a 60s question, right? But how square do the tefillin have to be, right? So the Rambam calls alasam biruvuad shielahen dalad zaviot shavot. They have to have four even corners. He says kavanasam uvu eres da ikar hazava yushavot in kain af im chidud haktzavot nikalkeluma at mabakach. Is as long as the corners are pretty much even. What happens is the corners will get slightly rubbed down. It's impossible not to, right? You put tefillin on one's arm, right? And it does rub against, you know, jacket, talus, etc. And it's made of leather. They're not made of titanium. So that means there's going to be slight. It's almost impossible to maintain a sharp corner on each corner. So the Aruch HaShulchan says, the Rambam seems to indicate, it doesn't have to be the sharp corner, you know, that you can like cut paper on it. Rather, it's enough that they should all be pretty much even. And he says, why? Od delon in the Torah, la malachei hasharis. The Torah was not given to angels. Kil kul hazavios, hi behechrech. The rubbing of the corners of the tefillin is going to inevitably happen. The Torah was not given to angels, right? The Emet. And he says, indeed, there are certainly some scribes who are experts. Mumchim gedolim bu'umnusam bebatim shloi kalkul. They can actually produce, and now they can do that nowadays, they can produce a tefillin which really will last tremendous amount of time without rubbing down. That's actually pretty standard nowadays. I guess then it was not technology wasn't as good, but now they can do that. But he says, "Aval ruba deruba ein biyecholtam laso." Okay, first of all, most scribes don't have the ability to do that. And the odd and important, lochin baad habatim shalahem mamon harbe. Shein biyecholet kol adam lahasigam. A lot of people cannot afford the really fancy tefillin cases that these sofrim make. The tefillin that these sofrim make. And that's a consideration. Interesting, I saw Rabbeinu Bachai, just as an aside, in a discussion as to why the Torah was mostly given orally and a very small amount of it is written. I mean, the text of the five books of Moses is quite short. It's quite a short book. If you take away all the commentaries and you take away all the translations, and you just have Chumash without anything else, it would be a fairly short book. Dickens, much longer, right? Of course, he was paid by the installment, so that's why his books are so long. But nevertheless, right, it's not that long. And Rabbeinu Bachai says a fascinating idea. He says, if all of the oral tradition would have been written down, our Torah scrolls, which are expensive enough as it is, how much would they be costing? Imagine, the Torah that we have is fairly short, and the Torah scroll costs, like a cheap Torah scroll is what, $30,000? Is that more? I have no, you're laughing, $50,000, do I hear 60? Whatever. So he says, if you'd have to write all of the details of the law in the Torah scroll, it would be, I mean, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars, and the Hagbah would be impossible. So it requires steroid use in shul. So what he says is, that even though a sofer can do it, but the Torah considers that the expenditure of money is a limitation. Not everyone can afford this. And it's just not fair to expect that everyone should pay huge amounts of money to these expert soferim so that we can have tefillin which are perfect, perfect cubes and will not be rubbed out. So nowadays it's pretty common to have them like that. But even so, what he's saying is in principle it's not a requirement because Lo nitna Torah, lo malach hasharis Torah was not given to angels. Another famous example of this, I have here the tshuva, it's a responsa of Yechavedas of the Rav Avadya Yosef, but he quotes from many earlier sources, and it was, you know, when what's his name, Levon Hook, I think his name was, I don't know how to pronounce it, Levon Hook, who was the, he created microscope, modern day microscope, so when he looked at the water in Amsterdam under his microscope, the drinking water in Amsterdam, what he discovered was lots of little beasties in the water. If I'd see the Beastie Boys in my water, I would not drink it. Right? So he saw a lot of little beasties in the water, right? And he was just amazed by all these little animals. And of course, it came to the awareness, there were Jews who said, well, can we still drink the water in Amsterdam? Can we still drink it? I mean, if it's full of all these little beasties, are they not prohibited as worms, creepy crawlies, and copepods, for example? So the response of all of the poskim of the time, all of the decisors, was that it's okay. Why? If the only way you can see this is with a microscope, if it's not visible to the naked eye, then as far as we're concerned, halachically, it doesn't exist. So if you can see it with the naked eye, as many poskims maintain, you can see copepods in the New York drinking water, that's actually a bit of an argument. You can see, if you hold up, you can see these white things moving around, right? I can't really see that they are copepods, but I can see that they're there. So is that considered that I can see them or not? That's a question. Okay, but the fact that if something cannot be seen without the aid of a microscope, as far as we're concerned, it doesn't exist. One of the poskim then wrote, he says, think of it. You're supposed to eat, for example, a certain amount of matzah. So let's say you have it, you don't like matzah that much. You take a tiny piece and you eat it while looking at it through a magnifying glass. It'd be very hard. I don't know how you could. You have to have a mirror as well. But would that be considered eating the appropriate? Of course not. He says, and by the same token, he says even lechumra, like a fish, which has got scales that can only be visible under a magnifying glass, that fish does not have scales from our perspective, because lo nitna Torah, lo malach, Torah was given to humans. And Rav Avadya Yosef points out that he's writing this in response to people who asked him, that they're checking karpas and chazeret and karpas, not sure what type of vegetables they're using, but they're checking it for bugs. And they're just nervous. This person's nervous. There are people who get nervous. So, as a friend of mine calls it, religiosus, as opposed to religiosity, right? They have religiosus, right? So, this woman checked, she checked the karpas and the chazeret. She said, I did check it regularly, but I don't know, maybe I missed stuff or something. So, Rabbi Yosef says, he says, take it chill, right? In other words, once you've checked it, he says, Be'ein yafeh ubriya, you've checked it with a good and healthy eye. Ubekoved rosh, you checked it seriously. Ein lachush yoter, lotalaim ketanim me'od, she'einam nirim, la'ayin, bilti mezuyenet. He says, you don't have to worry about tiny bugs or insects that cannot be seen with the unaided eye. He says, you don't have to worry about it. Why? Hare lo nitna Torah lamalache hasharet, because the Torah was not given to angels. We are supposed to check to the extent that we're able to, and beyond that, not my responsibility. The same is true. I'm always amazed. You know, halachically speaking, you buy an esrog. So it could be that ladies, you don't see a lot of ladies in esrog stores. Okay, but you go to the Esrog store, not that there's anything wrong with that, but just like reality, you don't see it. Like, you go to Esrog store, you've got people there with jeweler's loops, I think they're called, right? And they're looking at the Esrog. Now, halachically speaking, the Esrog is supposed to look nice, but mehudar, meaning it's called pre-eitz hadar, a beautiful tree, and it's supposed to be beautiful, and it's supposed to be without blemish, but without blemish, right, means that, as the Aruch HaShulchan puts it, if you hold it at normal length, meaning you'd normally hold it, let's say, like there, and you look at it, and in normal light, and you don't, right, in normal light, at normal length, normalized, you do not see blemishes on it, that's okay. Okay, I mean, looking at it like that, it means, who is without blemish? If someone would look at any of us with a loop, right, it would be really, really unpleasant, you know, right? So he's saying that's the obligation there, and the obligation doesn't go beyond that. And he says, and here he quotes here Rav Shlomo Kluger, who was one of the people who responded to that issue of the little bugs in the water that were seen under the microscope. He says, "Ein tzarich livdok hatolim al yedei zechuchit megadelet." One does not have to check for them with a magnifying glass. Shekol mashalo nira la'ein yafeh ubriya lo asra Torah. Anything which is not seen to a healthy, normal eye is not prohibited by the Torah. I mean, so obviously, for me to check for bugs without my glasses, that would be problematic, because you know, I could have huge cockroaches in the salad and I wouldn't notice, right? So that's not called. But this, just the glasses don't magnify, they just give me normal vision. They give me the normal vision of someone who doesn't need glasses. So that's considered normal, that's okay. But he's saying to actually have to use a magnifying glass, not necessary. So he says, Hare hadava yadua, masha omrim anshe hamada mumchim, as expert scientists tell us, shi'im nistakel b'microscope b'mayim, nira behem tolaim rochashim, u'b'chol zot ein mishi yachush lekach. We would see all types of worms in there. No one worries about this. We don't worry about it. Chen Kazav Sefer Mo'oreh, and also the Tiferes Yisrael and Mishnayos, and many, many sources, as is normal for Rav Avadya Yosef to bring every single source, and that really not have to worry about this. Now, this is not only true in halacha, but I think this is also true in areas, well, it's all halacha, but it's also true in areas Bein Adam L'Chaveiro as well, between one person and another. Meaning, this is not only true when it comes to, let's say, measuring a kazayit. Oh, and just by the way, I should point out, you look at all the measurements, all halachic measurements, it is interesting to note that they are all based on readily available produce in the land of Israel or the human body. So, for example, kazayis is an olive, and kibetza is an egg. And you have various shiurim, halachic measurements, which are based on readily available. The halachic measurement is not based on something which, you know, you'd have to have a degree in physics in order to access it, right? It's not based on the vibration of the cesium, the wavelength of the cesium atom, whatever it is, right? All that type of stuff. It does not require. It's based on things that are available to pretty much anyone living in the land of Israel. An amma is. That's an amma. That's like it's not a meter. It's not a foot. It's an amma. It's based on a human body. Everyone can measure that, right? This right etzba and a tefach, right tefach. All those measurements are measurements, which are available readily available because the Torah is meant to be able to be observed by pretty much anyone, any place, any time, without all types of advanced technology, etc. And so, but I want to also point out this principle that the Torah was not given to angels is also a principle in other areas of our life. So, for example, Shmoneh Prakim, the Rambam's introduction to his commentary on Ethics of the Fathers, where he has his views of psychology, the soul, etc. It's a very fascinating section, and he says there that I just want to get the appropriate part. He says, "Hachelek hazan v'achelek hamadameh," the part of the human being which involves basic needs and basic imagination, ein mishmaat behem v'lo meri. There's no level. There's nothing about obedience or rebellion in those areas. Hoyol v'ein ladat or lebichira bishneim maase klal. He says, because there is no actual free will action involved there. And a person cannot stop them from operating or limit them. In fact, what he means here is, in the area of the imagination, if a person has a desire for something which is wrong, is that a sin? The sin is if you take that desire and act on it. But the fact that it enters into a person's mind, some desire or some sin, imagining themselves doing something wrong, that in and of itself is not really something we can control. He says that's something where it's not considered a sin. Acting on it is a sin. Just for example, Lo Tachmod, one of the Ten Commandments, don't covet, don't be jealous. So, you know, I was giving a shiur in Philadelphia, Lower Merion, actually, YU, Kollel Yom Rishon, in Philadelphia about 2 weeks ago. I think it was on a Sunday. So I pull into the parking lot at the Lower Merion Synagogue, and a Maserati Quattroporte pulls in. It's a Maserati, four-door Maserati. It's a beautiful car. It's beautiful. And these people get out. I thought they were coming to my shiur. I thought, well, driving a Maserati. And they say, excuse me, is this where the so-and-so class is? No, I said, that's a conservative across the road. So they went out of the parking lot. But I must admit, when I saw that Maserati, right, I coveted that car. I said, oh my gosh, that's a beautiful car. Now, I don't think at that point I transgressed one of the Ten Commandments. The Gemara says, had I gone to them and said, listen, are you selling this? And they said, no, it's not for sale. I said, listen, I'll pay you a lot for it. Had I tried to convince them to sell it, had I pushed them to sell it, had I, you know, phoned them incessantly, sent them email after email, even though I didn't steal it, I'm prepared to buy it, that's a transgression of Lo Tachmod. But just the impulse itself, I said, that is a nice car. It's not possible, right? How could I? Right. So he says, in the area of the intellect, there could be sin. The Rambam says it's a little bit of a complex issue there, because as we know, there are intellectual sins, incorrect beliefs, believing in multiple gods, believing the God is corporeal, and so on and so forth, which the Rambam maintains are all sins. However, in the area of what he calls hazan v'amadameh, the imagination, the desire, he says that because it's normal. It's a human being. And furthermore, he points out, this is actually, I'm skipping a little bit, but in the Rambam, the last quote from the Rambam there, and so it goes on to the next page, the Rambam asks an interesting question. He says, philosophers tell us that a person who desires evil, but overcomes their desire, is on a lower level than a person who doesn't desire evil at all. I'm sorry, a lower level. Meaning, a person who's kovesh et yitzro, who overcomes their inclination, like for example, I think I might steal that car, but no, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. Right? That's a good thing, because I didn't steal it. That's excellent. However, the person who has no desire to steal the car in the first place, so theft, disgusting, it would never enter my mind, is a better person. So, right? That's what the philosophers say. And the Rambam also quotes Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, who says a similar thing, Nefesh Rasha, Iv Tara, the soul of the evil person desires evil. He says, however, this apparently is contradicted by our sages. Our sages tell us, in a very famous quote, Rav Shimon ben Gamliel says, it's on the next page there, a person should not say, it's the beginning of one of the lines is with a little quotation mark, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer. He says, Al Yomar Adam, E.F. Shili, Lechol Basar V'Chalav, a person should not say, I can't stand meat and milk. I am revolted by pig. I can't, Shatners find despicable. Why? Whatever. Right? He says, E.F. Shilabola Erva, sexual immorality is disgusting to me. He says, a person should not say that. A person should say, I would like to have some meat and milk. Philadelphia cheesesteak looks good. Pepperoni pizza is fascinating to me. Right? He should say that, but what can I do? God said not to. Because that seems to contradict the philosophers, because the sages seem to be saying that the desire for evil is okay. So the Rambam answers that it depends what type of mitzvah you're talking about. Notice, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel did not say, a person should not say, I would love to steal and pillage and kill. But God said not to. They did not say that. What mitzvahs did they use as examples? Kashrut, shatners, right? In other words, mitzvot, which we call chukim, generally. He says, a mitzvah like don't steal, don't be violent, don't lie, etc., those are mitzvot you're supposed to incorporate into your personality, right? You're supposed to develop into a person who finds injustice abhorrent, who finds pillage revolting, who, right, etc. Right, but it's okay to be a person who would like to try lobster. Right? It's okay. The Torah doesn't expect me to go through life and find lobster. Right? In fact, you're not supposed to educate your children that way. I understood this. I my kids, most of them, brought up in Har Nof in Yerushalayim. So I read them this book, Green Eggs and Ham, Dr. Seuss. Okay? So my kids always, the first question the kids generally ask when I would read it to them for the first time, what's ham? Right, green eggs don't seem to bother them. Like a kid's thing, you know, they're weird. Right, so green eggs don't bother. But ham, what's ham? So I say, well, ham is from a pig, it's the meat of a pig. And my kid's reaction is always, ew. I say, it's not ew. I say, what do you mean? We don't eat it. I say, yeah, well, we eat broccoli. They say, good point. Right, so they say, so it's not ooh, is it? It's not unhealthy. So why don't we eat it? I said, Hashem said not to. In other words, I could educate the children to believe that ham is disgusting and dirty and tastes terrible and unhealthy and so on and so forth. A, that would be intellectually dishonest, and B, it would be defeating the purpose. God doesn't want to turn us into instinctive ham haters. That's not what it's about. He wants to give us the ability to control ourselves. So if I walk by the hot dog stand and I say, oh, the smell, it's disgusting, have I actually done a mitzvah? Is that an act of self-control? There's no self-control in that. That's just I've created an instinctive creature. But that's not what the halacha is about. Halacha is about, but self-control means I do have a desire, but I'm able to control it. Humans have desires. Yeah. So we don't, so, no, it's a rabbinic term, Right, well, I think it's a Gemara Psachim, it's a Gemara Psachim, right? It said, referring to it, just the term, just to keep your, speech appropriate. The Torah doesn't say, don't eat something tameh, it says, eineno tahor, something which is not pure, as opposed to, right? But on the other hand, right, this doesn't mean, the way Rosh Shimon Galil is saying it, doesn't mean that I should be instinctively, on the contrary, according to halacha, am I allowed to have a pig leather wallet? 100%. No problem. Okay, why not? Absolutely fine. Right, could I wear a, I mean, it would be extremely unfashionable, but a pig's leather jacket. I mean, yeah, you could do that. Shark skin coat. I mean, I don't know, right? So you could, right? There's nothing. It's not like it's different a little bit from Islam. In Islam, in Sharia law, the pig is like haram. It's not just you can't eat it. It's difficult, disgusting. Etc. You can't wear it, etc. etc. Right? But what the Rambam here is saying, that it's okay to have a healthy desire for something which is non-kosher food, as long as you are able to control it. If you're able to control it and say, I will not eat that, that's great. That's what the Torah wants. So in other words, that's an example of this idea of being human. The other piece in the Shmoneh Prakim, which I skipped, is where what he suggests for someone who's feeling a little down. Someone burnt out or down. So the Rambam says, im nishis orolav mara shchora, yasira b'shmiat shirim u'minan aginos. He says, listen to songs and music, betil beganot u'b'binyanim na'im, walk in the gardens and nice buildings, beautiful buildings, b'yeshiva im tsurot not, sit in the presence of beautiful pictures, things that will expand the soul. He says this hopefully will remove, he says, the your depression in some way. So he's saying, and there's a letter I quote later on from the Chazon, I'm sorry, the photocopy is not that great, I scanned it, it's on the last page. It's a letter from the Chazon Ish to a yeshiva student. It's a great letter. It's the very last entry. It's on page 3. Michtavcha higiani, your letter reached me. Dalacha yikiri, sheinkan lochet v'lo ashra. This guy, as a yeshiva student, wrote to him that he's having a hard time learning. He's burnt out. He can't go on for the rest of the semester. So the Chazon Ish says, no, there's no sin and there's no guilt. Mechukei ateva l'hitayev, it is a natural thing to become weary. Ein ra'ui lezalzel b'chukei ha-teva, and one should not treat the laws of nature lightly. Ki masha'anu korin teva, what we call nature, ha-mechuvam b'zeh ratzon ha-yoter matmid shalam ha-aveh kol ha-vayot b'rach. Nature is just another name for the will of God, which is the continuous will of God. So he says, treating the law of nature lightly, that people get weary, people get burnt out, he says, don't, that's not a sin. Don't have to be guilty about that. Ulechein, chavatcha, lahafsik limudcha legamrei, al meshesh shvuot. You are obligated to stop learning Torah completely for 2 weeks. V'tarbeh b'chalkala umazon mavri. Increase in activities and food that are healthy. Lahosif alashena, sleep more. V'atiyul, go for walks, go for tours. And engage in matters of idleness. This is the Chazon Ish, wow, writing to a yeshiva student. Right? Maybe come here for a few days. And it's interesting, there's a follow-up letter. Oh, look, he says, V'ashrecha sh'amalta b'torah. You should be happy that you worked on Torah. V'tashe kocha aleh, and your strength was worn out by your learning Torah. He says very, it's very nice. And if I'm just skipping to the second last paragraph, Ma'od hit'anadti al dvarecha b'divrei Torah, hamarim et osher nishmatcha bo'ora Torah. I was very pleased by your words of Torah that show the wealth of wisdom in your soul. Aval ein ritzoni likanes ata b'iyunam. I don't want to talk about them in any depth at this point. Ki tova ata lefanecha hamenucha, because you need to rest. In other words, the Chazon Ish says, I'm not even responding to your Dvar Torah. Because what you need to do now is rest. Not read my response or critique or of your Divrei Torah. Very nice what you wrote. Very nice. That's all I'm saying about it. That's, so the Chazon Ish is saying to this guy, because you know, I have a feeling that he may have spoken to his mashkiach in the yeshiva, and he may have given him musar and said, Shegetz, what do you mean? Just take off, right? And he wrote to the Chazon Ish, and the Chazon Ish said, take 2 weeks, don't learn, engage in healthy food, a lot of sleep, and a lot of divrei batola. Right? Just waste your time a lot, right? So I became aware of this Chazon Ish because my mashkiach yeshiva, Rav Osher Rubenstein Zatzal, I remember it was a winter's month, it was like a 4-5 month and I had burnt serious burnout by about 3.5 months into it. So I went to Rav Osher Rubenstein Zatzal and he showed me this letter of the Chazon Ish. And he says, here, this is a cheap hotel. It was called Malon Eretz Yisrael. No longer exists. It was right, it's an old building right next to what's called today the Leonardo Plaza. Right? It was like really cheap room. You had to share the room with three other people. It was like a hostel. Basically a part of it. And it was like, he says, cheap hotel you can afford. Go take 3 days. Be marbe bedvorim betailing. Right? And I'm like, whoa. And Chazon Ish? So yes, that is indeed, you could be human. Another example of this is the area of pride. I mean, is it appropriate to have, like, for instance, and here I'm not sure if I have time to go through all the sources, but well, on that last page as well that we were just looking at in the lousy scans, one of my Shlomo Fischer Schlitter, Yibodel Lachaim Tovim, he has a discussion here. He starts off quoting Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. He says, "Hine matu ba mishmeider hagon Rabbi Yisrael Salanter zal, she'ein lifnei iver lo titei michshol noheg b'midot." Meaning, before the blind don't place a stumbling block is a prohibition of causing someone else to do a sin. What if I act in such a way that makes you feel angry? Have I transgressed lifnei iver? So Rabbi Yisrael Salanter says, I don't think so. He brings a proof from the Gemara. The Gemara says, Rabba bar Rav Huna kara shiroyim ba'anpe Rabba Brei. Rabba bar Rav Huna tore up some silk owned by his son. It's type of like to test him, to see if his kibbut ava'ei, right? Ezel echze iratach. Let me see if he gets angry. The Gemara says, Dilma Rata, maybe he would get angry, and he didn't get angry. His son was a tzaddik, even though his father did something crazy, right? His son didn't say anything. So maybe the Gemara, maybe he'll get angry. Demachil Liyakri, he says, what if he gets angry at his father and he treats him in an inappropriate fashion? So the Gemara says, Machil Liyakri, ahead of time, the father already said, whatever he does, I'm moichel. In other words, I forgo it, I forgive him. So that's all very nice regarding the prohibition of kibud av va'em. But Rabbi Yisrael Salanter would say, what about the prohibition of getting angry? Even if the father is moichel, if the son gets angry, have you not caused him to do a sin? The kasha nehi demachil leyakre sof sof machshilo b'midas hakas. Even though the father foregoes his honor, is he not causing his son to stumble in the transgression of getting angry? And here Rabbi Yisrael Salanter would say, Al korchach ein lifnei iver no b'midot. We see from here a proof that lifnei iver does not apply to midot. Rabbi Shlomo Fischer takes issue with this. He says, I don't agree. He says, I don't see the proof. You know why? He says, kushya me'ikara later. There is no problem. Why, he says? Because the Torah, and he quotes here the Sefer HaChinuch, who I've quoted in a much clearer print on page 2, the Sefer HaChinuch says, you know, there's a prohibition of lotikom, you're not allowed to take revenge. Someone says, can you lend me the leaf blower? And I say, you didn't lend me your snow blower last winter. I'm not going to lend you my leaf blower. Are you allowed to do that? No, that's called lotikon. That's called taking revenge. If you say, of course I'll lend it to you. You think I'm like you? You miser, you didn't lend me your leaf blower. I'm going to lend you my snow blower. That's also prohibited to say that. Why? That's called harbouring a grudge. However, what if someone walks over to you and insults you? Right there. Like, you festering, malodorous, whatever, they insult you, right? It's a Monty Python insult sketch, argument sketch. Anyway, but what if they say that? Are you allowed to respond? What if someone slaps you? So, they slap you, cad. You know, the gloves, whatever. I don't think people do that anymore, but let's say, right? Are you allowed to... It's not self-defense, because there's no danger at this point. It's no self-defense. Are you allowed to respond? Sefer Achinuch says, yes, that is not prohibited by the Torah because of revenge. You know why? And he says, Lo tetzave ha-Torah liyot ha-adam ke-even shotek limacharpav kamolim avarchav. The Torah did not command us to be a stone in the presence of those who insult us and treat them exactly as someone who blesses us. You're not obligated to be a stone. If someone is insulting me, is in my face, I can respond in kind. He says, true, there are people of elevated character who le'alavim ve'enam olvim, they hear insult and they don't insult back. They are indeed praiseworthy, and it's a midat chassidut. It's an act of piety to do that. But is it a halachic obligation to not respond when someone insults me? To not slap someone when they've slapped me? He says, no prohibition there. No prohibition. That's not covered by nekama, the prohibition of revenge. That's fascinating. The Chafetz Chaim cites this, lahalacha, in Sefer Shmiras Haloshim, in Sefer Chafetz Chaim. This is halacha. Most Rishonim agree with this. So Rav Shlomo Fischer says, what we see from here is, normal human emotion is not prohibited. In other words, 6 months later, to harbour the grudge and say, there's no way I'm lending you my snowblower, that we're expected to overcome. But at the moment that the guy's telling me, right, that I am a lowlife, insulting me, I'm allowed to respond. The Torah does not obligate me to be a silent stone who does not respond. And so Rav Shlomo Fischer says, we see here, for example, he says, if someone comes over and compliments you, according to the Smug, Sefer Mitzvah Scholar Rav Moshe of Kutzi, it is a biblical prohibition to have gaiva. Gaiva meaning haughtiness, ego. So does that mean you're not allowed to compliment someone? That is a beautiful dress. You look so good today. So are you transgressing for placing a stumbling block before the blind? Because the person will feel, ugh. Rav Shlomo Fischer says, no. Why not? Not because of Rav Yisrael Salanter's logic. Different logic. He says, normal feeling of feeling good about yourself is okay. If someone comes over to me afterwards and says, that was a good class, don't feel obligated, no pressure. But if someone does come over and say, thanks, that was a great class, and I feel good about that, have I transgressed the biblical prohibition? No, that's a normal human emotion, to feel some measure of pride in having done something okay. It's okay, that's fine. If you chose your colours well, right, and it's great, and someone says, yeah, that's great, they blow, oh, so nice, and you say, thank you, that's okay to feel that way. He's saying, so, or if someone tears up the silk garment, like in the case in the Gemara, he tears up the silk garment in front of his son, and his son feels like, right, he gets angry about it. That's normal. He has not caused his son to transgress a prohibition, because it's normal to feel angry about something like that. So Rav Shlomo Fischer claims, and this is a slightly more subtle area of Lo Nitna Torah, Lamalache, Hasharat Torah was not given to angels. An angel would not feel pride. An angel would not feel anger. An angel would not respond to insult. A human, normal human being does feel that way. Could you cultivate midas chasidus, piety, to the extent that you do not respond, you're totally in control, etc.? Yes, you can. And it's a good thing to aspire towards. That's great. But if you're not there yet, like most of us, you haven't done a sin. Lo nitna Torah l'malacha ashares, according to the Sefer HaChinuch, the way Rosh Shlomo Fisher understands it, the Chazon Ish, and others, right, it is indeed okay to be human, whether that means feeling sadness and actually expressing grief over a tragedy, that's okay. Whether it's being able to honestly, whether it comes to checking with a magnifying glass or a jeweler's loop to look for stuff, right, etc., that's also okay. Does your tool have to be so precise that it's like you'll cut your finger on it, right, because the corners are so sharp? It's fine, right? Chill out. Take it easy. And when it comes also to interaction with other people and to my own personal midot, it's okay. If I would like to taste lobster, it's okay, you know. If I get Shef Hayam, so there's a kibbutz in Israel, OU Hechsher, and they produce kosher prawn, lobster, calamari, and crab. Now, the crab is excellent. I've tasted it. Fantastic. Right? So that's okay. Right? And if I feel a little bit of pride when someone compliments me, or I feel a little anger when someone insults me, even if I respond back to them, that is also, if I can work on myself to get to a level where I don't respond, that's fantastic. Midas chasidus, act of piety. But if I'm not there, it's okay to be human. Hashem understands. He created us with all of our various faults. He created us with those emotions. And those emotions, in a sense, if they're normal, okay. If the pride is such that it's beyond what is norm, which is not easy to define, but it's the type of thing that when we see it, we know it, is okay. If it's beyond that, that's when it's not okay. But to actually be human, halacha, hashkafa, psychology, midot, character traits, etc., it actually does accept that it's okay to be human. That's the idea. So thank you very much, and thank you for coming. Everyone looks great. All right, so done.